counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is James Terrell. I'm a member of the firm of Patton Boggs, and I represent today appellant the Weinberg Group and the Lago Agria plaintiffs. The magistrate judge ordered the Weinberg Group to produce all documents relating to its work on the Lago Agria litigation. It held that all privilege claims were overridden by the crime fraud exception. It further held that the Weinberg Group could not redact any documents, even documents that were irrelevant or contained information about other clients. And it did all of this without holding any in-camera or other review whatsoever. We submit that the court erred on multiple grounds. Number one, the essence of the crime fraud that the court found below was the supposed disguising by the Weinberg Group through the supplemental experts of essentially reiterating the Cabrera report. It concluded that the way those documents were submitted disguised the real source of the information from those six experts. We submit that that is plain error because the face of the documents, the reports themselves, explicitly cite the Cabrera report.
Realize that might be your biggest win, but is that really your strongest argument?
No, Your Honor, a couple of the others.
How about starting with one of the strong ones here?
Okay, I will, Your Honor.
Okay.
The district court, the court below concluded that it was bound by the decision of Judge Kaplan. That cannot be the case, either as a matter of law under the law of the case doctrine, and particularly because the decision it claimed it was bound by, Judge Kaplan's opinion, was reversed and vacated in its entirety since the decision of the lower court. Third, the court did not inquire at all into the mandatory second prong of the crime fraud exception. It did not look at the question of whether any of the 1,400 documents in issue actually advanced the crime or fraud. As such, it erred as a matter of law. We believe the appropriate disposition, before I turn to my four specific arguments with the court's permission, is as follows. This court should reverse the district court. It should direct that the documents in question be returned to the Weinberg Group. And it should then dismiss the action because the fundamental predicate for the issuance of the subpoena, the Salazar action in New York, has now been dismissed as a final order. Turning to my first argument.
Question about that relief. Is the question of dismissal of the inquiry below, is that before us today?
We believe it is, Your Honor. We believe that in light of the fact that there is no predicate for the subpoena, there cannot be an action on the subpoena which would require the dismissal.
Shouldn't that be taken up first with the district court if we were to remand for the other grounds that you're offering? And for that ground, shouldn't the question of dismissal of the action first be presented in the court of first instance?
Your Honor, it would not be inappropriate to do so, but like the Second Circuit did when I argued, had the privilege of arguing there, it was so clear what had to be done that the Second Circuit instructed Judge Kaplan to dismiss. We think it would not be inappropriate here, since it is clear that there is no predicate for a subpoena out of an action that doesn't any longer exist. But in either event, we would hope that someone would dismiss the action. My first argument, Your Honor, my first point, is that the lower court's finding of fraud on the Ecuadorian court is contrary to the record evidence. And I will rush to get to my second point, which is perhaps more important. But when you take a look at the record before this court, it is quite clear that all four of the experts that touched upon the Cabrera report made clear in their reports that they were doing so. Paolo Scardino, in the appendix at 1224, cited to the Cabrera report 35 times. Douglas Allen at 1440, similarly. It's very interesting that the Barnhouse and Sheffitz reports are not even in the record. It was up to Chevron, if it felt that there was a basis for a crime fraud exception, to put those documents in the record, since the issue was that they supposedly masked their reliance on Cabrera. They didn't even put them in the record, but we know what's in them because each of these experts was the subject of litigation in a separate federal court, and in the case of Barnhouse in the Southern District of Ohio, the court there, in its opinion, found explicit the heavy reliance by that expert on Cabrera. Similarly, as to Sheffitz in the District of Massachusetts, the court there concluded that Sheffitz's analysis started with reliance on the Cabrera report. So it's just impossible to say that the reliance on Cabrera by these experts was hidden or masked. Moreover, because the court, and I'm coming to that argument, relied on Kaplan, it really disregarded the decision of the court here of primary jurisdiction, and that is the Ecuadorian trial, and now we have the benefit of the appellate court decision. And in Ecuador, an appellate court decision is decided de novo. Both of those courts concluded, with respect to the supplementary experts, that there was nothing to Chevron's argument that it masked or hid their reliance.
I'm asking again, counsel, if really you're fighting the battle of the existence of the crime fraud, you're fighting a merits battle when aren't you stronger on the other grounds that you stated when you're going through your four grounds? Isn't any of those going to give you the results you want here without us having to decide something very close to merits?
Well, Your Honor, I think I win on all four. So the fourth one's a little bit different.
And I know you just love to win on this one where
well,
you
I,
say
well,
no crime fraud exception available. But do you really think that is how you're best spending your time before us?
No, but I think
other than venting.
I'll move on to the other argument, Your Honor. My point is clear, okay? The Ecuadorian court rejected Chevron's argument. Six United States federal courts rejected Chevron's argument. So I turn to my second point. The lower court erred as a matter of law because it held it was bound by Judge Kaplan's purported findings. It was not bound by the doctrine of law of the case or anything else by Judge Kaplan's findings. As the Supreme Court said in the University of Texas Kamenisch case, courts are not bound by findings or conclusions of courts in granting preliminary injunctions. In short, the court's analysis erred as a matter of law. But the problem became compounded when the court then extrapolated from that error. What did it do? It ignored the six district courts that I've mentioned before. It ignored the court of primary jurisdiction. But then, I suggest to you, it effectively denied the Weinberg Group its due process rights. It simply said the Weinberg Group, not a party to the action in New York, was somehow bound by the conclusions that this court had to adopt following Judge Kaplan. If that's true, the Weinberg Group never had any day in court whatsoever. And so if you move beyond those legal arguments to the practical reality of what happened, I was privileged to argue before the Second Circuit back on September the 15th, and 3 days later, the circuit issued an order reversing and vacating in its entirety Judge Kaplan's decision, opinion to follow, which came down in January.
So if we agree with you, were we to agree with you on this point, that is, that the district court erred by believing that it was bound by Judge Kaplan, is that all we have to decide? Anything else we have to decide to resolve this appeal?
There is an argument Chevron makes that urges you to go beyond that. I don't think you have to decide it, but I'll articulate what it is. Chevron says that notwithstanding the Second Circuit's decision, nothing disturbed Judge Kaplan's findings and conclusions, and that therefore those findings and conclusions were there to be followed as a matter of discretion by Judge Fasciola. That's, of course, not what Judge Fasciola did. He concluded he was bound. But Chevron is wrong as a matter of law because those findings and conclusions were voided at the time that the court entered its judgment and entered its reversal. And with that respect, I look at several court decisions, the Ninth Circuit, this circuit in Henning versus Partridge in 1966, said, when an appellate decision is without limitation as to how much of the trial court's decision is set aside, all is set aside. In short, I don't think you have to go beyond it. Chevron suggests you do. They're wrong as a matter of law.
Don't we also have to deal with the district court's alternative, finding that even if I'm not bound by Judge Kaplan, I still find that the record is adequate to abrogate?
We respectfully say no, because there was no record before the court.
No, but don't we have to resolve that? What is your position about that? In other words, let's assume you're right that the district court is not bound. That's issue number one. Now he's got an alternative holding, right? He says, even if I'm not bound, I find that the record is adequate here.
There is one sentence to that effect, and our answer is there is no basis for that determination.
Because
if he is not bound and he simply accepted Judge Kaplan feeling he was bound, there was no evidence before the court itself to justify that one-line conclusion. My third argument, Your Honors, is that the lower court erred in applying the crime fraud exception without making any determination as to whether the documents were created or used in furtherance of a fraud. That second prong is mandatory. It is the law of this circuit, as stated in U.S. versus White. The crime fraud exception applies only when the communications further a crime, fraud, or other misconduct. It does not suffice that the communications may be related to a crime. In short, here, it was not within the court's discretion, as Chevron suggests, to ignore any finding under the crime fraud exception. In this very group of cases, that precise issue was presented to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and they reversed precisely on that ground. Now, Chevron conflates that argument by saying, but they had discretion not to do document-by-document in-camera review. Well, that may or may not be the case, but here the court did not make the decision under the second prong whatsoever. And while the Supreme Court indicated that it is discretionary with the court how it addresses the second prong of the crime fraud exception, it is not discretionary to ignore it altogether. Let me point out the practical reality, Your Honor. There were 1,400 documents that were on the list prepared either the privilege log or the so-called redaction log by the Weinberg Group. The law is clear that at the time the crime or fraud ends, documents created after that event cannot be subject to the crime fraud exception. Here, 1,194 documents were on the privilege log, 714 post-dated September 16, 2010. That was the date that the supplemental expert reports were submitted pursuant to court order in Ecuador. That was the date, if there was ever a fraud, and we suggest there wasn't any, that the fraud ended. 68% of the documents that the court ordered produced post-dated the closure of the purported fraud. It just makes no sense whatsoever. I turn to my last argument, Your Honor. The lower court erred by ordering the wholesale disclosure of documents properly redacted. There is no doubt that the law of this circuit and elsewhere permits a party not to produce irrelevant documents, not to produce confidential or personal information. And if there's a mixed document, it sustains the right to properly redact those documents. In an excess of caution, the Weinberg Group, fulfilling the prophecy that no good deed goes unpunished, submitted what it did not have to submit, a redaction log claiming exactly what it redacted. The district court, the magistrate judge, respectfully erred again. What the court concluded was it applied the standard of detail required for a privilege log to the voluntarily submitted redaction log. There is no such standard applicable to a redaction log, simply because you don't have to produce a redaction log whatsoever. So the court jumped from that conclusion to say there isn't enough detail here, and then concluded that I've sufficiently concluded that there is a prima facie showing of fraud. I elect as a matter of discretion not to look at the documents. In so doing that, as I already said, we believe that the court violated the obligation the mandatory obligation to address the second prong of the crime fraud exception, but then jumped to ordering the Weinberg Group to produce personal, confidential information, indeed information about other law firms and other litigations, which cannot be appropriate. So I come to my conclusion, Your Honor, and then would reserve the remainder of my time, if appropriate, for rebuttal. Although it is not my best argument, I did start with it, which was perhaps not a good choice. When it was my privilege years ago to clerk for the Third Circuit, the court said to me, do two things, learn when to shut up, and when the court gives you guidance, try to take it. So I'll do my second one first, okay? Not bound by Judge Kaplan. Kaplan reversed, okay? Never considered the second prong of crime fraud. Improperly ordered the production of confidential documents. And then my last argument, because I don't want to give it up, it's just plain on its face that there was no basis for a prima facie determination of fraud. Nothing was disguised.
We're likely to decide that if we don't have to.
I don't think you have to decide it, Your Honor. I would like you to decide it. Okay. There's no doubt about that, Your Honor. I've argued this before the Third Circuit, the Second Circuit. Okay.
We have the record. We know that this case has been argued in more courts than probably any case in United States history, Counsel.
The fact, Your Honor, that when we showed up outside, there was a line that said, Chevron people come here, indicates that the case has been all over the place. I'm concluded for now, Your Honor, and I'd like to reserve the remaining 4 minutes for rebuttal with the court's permission.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning. Thank you, Chief Judge Sentell, and may it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's ruling, all of aspects of which are subject to abusive discretion review and entitled to deference. Let me go right to Judge Tatel's point. Mr. Terrell has no answer for Judge Fascio's independent finding. He did rely.
What is the independent finding? It's one sentence, isn't it? Right?
Well, it's one sentence, Your Honor. After
you read it to us.
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. Don't put
any ellipses in
it. I'm not going to put any ellipses. I hasten to add that if the question were an open one, I would find that the evidence marshaled by Judge Kaplan and then applied by Judge Francis to the privilege question convinces me that there's more than sufficient evidence of a prima facie case that the Weinberg Group's work was part of a fraud upon the Ecuadorian court.
Is that sufficient to make out an independent finding where he expressly relies upon the evidence as marshaled by the other judge and applied by the second judge?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Rule 104 of the Rules of Evidence, Judge Fasciola was not bound by the rules of evidence in making this privilege call.
But he had to make a finding. You're overcoming an attorney-client privilege here, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Work product, actually, Your Honor.
Work product, actually. And he had to make a finding to do that, didn't he? You can't just walk in and say, I have the discretion to pierce this important privilege and pierce it. That's not the breadth of discretion is not that broad. He still had to make a finding, didn't he?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Where the finding, even the one sentence independent finding, is intertwined with the finding and conclusion of another judge, and that decision has been set aside by an appellate court. Is that something we should uphold?
I think you should, Your Honor, for several reasons. First, Judge Fasciola talked about the evidence in his opinion. The first 6, 7, 8 pages, he summarized, described the evidence, found that the Weinberg Group's role was part of this cleansing the Cabrera report. He found that their activities were part of the ongoing fraud on the court. Secondly, Judge Kaplan's opinion went in great detail and marshaled the evidence. So it wasn't just the findings. He laid out the evidence, Chief Judge Sentell, in great detail. And I might add, this wasn't Judge Kaplan's first opinion. You know, we cited the opinion at 749 FSUP to Judge Fasciola and in our brief to this court. That is a detailed opinion that many parts of which are incorporated into these findings, affirmed by the Second Circuit, where he found that there was evidence that the fraud through the Cabrera report, and it's a blatant fraud.
Right, but is that enough to invoke, to abrogate the privilege? I'll tell you what I'm getting at. Your very first sentence in your brief, you quote the district court as saying, in this jurisdiction, a prima facie case a prima facie case that a crime or fraud has been committed suffices to invoke the crime fraud exception. Now, you know, that's not a correct statement of the law in this circuit, right? I mean, you cite in one of our cases, in Ray Steele case, which makes quite clear that the existence of a fraud is only step one. You also have to show that the documents you're seeking were in furtherance of the fraud, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the district court's statement of the law that you embrace is wrong in this circuit. And it seems to me you can't simply rely on that one sentence finding without showing us that even though the district court misstated the law, that he went on to make the additional finding that the documents he's ordering produced were in furtherance of the crime or fraud.
Your Honor, in the work product context.
Is that wrong?
Let me supplement what Your Honor said. this court in the In Re Sealed case from 2000 in 1997 said that where the work product doctrine is at play, rather than specific attorney-client privileged communications, the test is whether the general purpose of the retention of the consultants here, or the lawyers in that case, was to further a crime or fraud. The record is ample on that point, and Judge Fasciola made two findings
so
on that point.
Your position is that there's no requirement to make an in furtherance of finding? Is that your position?
I think Judge Fasciola did. He didn't
use... You have any case that says that?
This court's cases say that specifically the 1985 In Re Sealed case says that there has to be some relationship between the sought-after material and the fraud.
Right, and other cases say, as other circuits have, that it must be in furtherance of the fraud.
Yes, Your Honor, and in the work...
The cases are very clear about that.
They are, Your Honor.
So where do we find that finding in the district court here?
Well, for example, on page A17, Judge Fasciola found that the Weinberg Group's role... And that's consistent with this court's test. In the preparation and submission of the cleansing reports was clearly a part of such an alleged fraud, and its privilege cannot...
Okay, that's element one of the crime-fraud analysis. What about two?
I think, Your Honor, that's part two, that it's part of...
That it's in furtherance of...
I think if it's in it, part of, Your Honor...
And what about counsel's... I mean, it seems to me your counsel just, you know, crystallized the problem perfectly, which is that 68% of the documents that the district court ordered produced were generated after the alleged fraud ended.
That's simply incorrect, Your Honor. The fraud is continuing to this day. And
I was just curious. The reason I asked you that question is I didn't see a response to that in your brief. But
Your Honor, they didn't make the argument.
So the fraud is continuing beyond the date the reports were filed?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The reports were filed.
Go ahead.
Well, let me explain, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
The Cabrera report was an egregious fraud that this court would never tolerate in this court. The ghostwriting of
that's
report.
That's not an answer to the question you were just asked.
We've
read the vitriol that the two sides of this case want to spill on each other, and we don't need to hear any more of it. Just please go to the lower facts of the case without as many adjectives as we've had in the past.
I understand, Your Honor. But here, Your Honor, the submission of the cleansing reports that before the Ecuadorian court was part of the effort to continue the Cabrera report. They did cite the Cabrera report.
What did the Ecuadorian court say about that? Ecuadorian court didn't conclude that the supplemental reports were a fraud on it. It's the victim of this, right? The alleged victim. And it didn't find that these were fraudulent.
Well, first, Your Honor, we believe that Ecuadorian judgment is fraudulent and in the product of a corrupt system, and there's no reason to defer to it. That's really one of the significant issues in terms of enforcement. It would have to be recognized and enforced. But the Ecuadorian court said a number of things and then said, but that's being litigated in the United States. We have a RICO claim in New York where these issues are being litigated. But to go to your point, Judge Tatel, because I think it's an important point, once the cleansing reports were filed, the judgment hadn't come out. They rushed to get those in there because they were worried the judgment would come out and completely rely on the Cabrera report. So they got these reports in. We have evidence that the plaintiff's lawyers ghostwrote the judgment and documents that the Weinberg Group gave to one of the cleansing experts from internal files showed up in the judgment.
So
wouldn't that have been a nice thing for the district judge, the trial judge, to have looked for in a review of the document?
Well, Your Honor,
like in camera, for example?
If the Weinberg Group had asked them to do that, the judge to do that, they didn't. They went all or nothing. They
prepared a privilege log. What did they do with it?
They prepared a privilege log that just had
redaction log
and a redaction log. That's correct. But they didn't. They in their briefing to the district court, Chief Judge Senzel said there was no fraud. This Cabrera thing is not a big deal.
What did they do with the logs that they had prepared? Did they just prepare them and not tell the judge about them?
Oh, no, they submitted them, Your Honor.
Right. Was that not in furtherance of an attempt to have the judge review the documents?
Usually, Your Honor, they would have to ask for that. They briefed.
What do you think they were doing when they filed those logs?
They were showing the privilege claims they had made, Your Honor, and I think that.
Yeah, they're showing the privilege claims they have made in a form in which trial judges normally, or at least often would have said, well, I'll need to look at it to see whether the logs reflect reality.
Well,
it sounds like a way of asking for it, counsel. I mean, it's been a long time since I was a trial judge, but I was a trial judge, and it
was a very, very, very subtle
I think
way.
At that point, I might have said, I don't know, I wasn't in Judge Fitzgerald's court, but I might have said, well, I'll need to look at the documents to see the validity of the logs.
I think this finding of Judge Fasciola is entitled to significant deference. He found that to be gamesmanship. They never suggested they wanted an in-camera review. I know the court doesn't want me to get into the various statements on both sides, but multiple courts around the country have found that this was a terrible fraud on the court.
And multiple courts have found that it wasn't, right?
That's incorrect, Your Honor. Well, let me go to that.
What about 6 he refers to
Thank
in
you.
Brief?
Thank you, Your Honor. Three of the courts didn't reach the crime fraud exception with respect to these cleansing experts. So they didn't talk about it. They required production of everything. Two of them found that the individual experts had no knowledge of the fraud, and that's correct. They were duped. They weren't told about the Cabrera fraud. And the third one, Allen, the court found that the documents themselves that he produced didn't reflect a fraud. But that's not the test. Here, it doesn't matter if they were innocent. In the Synanon case, which was 1985, In Re Sealed case, and these are serious issues, Judge Senzel. I know there's a lot of rhetoric.
These are very serious issues.
But if
we're talking about professional privilege here.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure that the line between the work product and attorney-client is as clean as you're saying, but it's there. But either way, we're talking about an important privilege, and we're talking about a wholesale breach of it, where we've not said these documents fall outside. The order as it stands now just says we're not going to allow the privilege.
Your Honor, and finishing up, Mr. Allen, let me give you an example. He's the one of the experts where they found no crime fraud. The judge found it by looking at the actual documents. That's not the test. The test is whether this was an effort to, once the fraud was exposed, to then cleanse it, to disguise it by citing the Cabrera report, doubling down on the fraud. And Mr. Allen didn't even know that there had been this fraud finding with respect to Mr. Cabrera, which courts around the country, district courts in California, North Carolina, New York, New Jersey, have said, if this isn't a fraud, nothing is. And when they were caught, they downplayed in their brief. They say, well, this is a controversy manufactured by Chevron. Their own lawyers, Mr. Terrell's colleagues down in Ecuador, said, if this comes out, this will be devastating to our case in Ecuador, and we could all go to jail. And then, instead of stopping the fraud, they hired new experts through the Weinberg Group and continued the fraud.
Can we go back to the fundamentals here? I mean, I know you feel strongly about this case, and I know you think this was a major fraud, and maybe it was, but our case law is very clear on what the standard is here. U.S. v. White, correct? You agree that sets forth the proper standard.
A prima facie case that...
Here. It does not suffice that the communication may be related to a crime. That's the first sentence, okay? To subject it to the exception, it must actually have been made with an intent to further the unlawful act.
That's incorrect, Your Honor.
Yeah.
That's not the standard. The standard is that it must have some...
You understand that my colleague was reading from a case.
Well, the In Re Seal.
You may think that's incorrect, but I believe he was reading from a case.
That, when we're talking about work product doctrines, Your Honor,
I asked you for a case that said that this doesn't apply for work product, and you didn't give me one.
Your Honor, I did. In Re Sealed Case 2000, it's cited in the brief.
In Re Sealed Case has the same standard that White has.
What's the citation on that?
Let me get you the citation, Your Honor. Because the court has clearly made that distinction. And again, I think we meet the standard. 223 F3rd, page 775 at 778. The court says, to establish the exception to the work product privilege, courts ask a slightly different question, focusing on the client's general purpose in consulting a lawyer rather than on his intent regarding this particular communication. Did the client consult the lawyer or use the material for the purpose of committing a crime or a fraud? And Judge Fasciola found specifically that role, the purpose of consulting Weinberg, was to commit the fraud. I think that meets the standard. Now, if there's some confusion in the case law, I think that's pretty clear. And in the 1985 case, which involved fraud in the court, the Synanon case, said a person in the position of the Weinberg group, they can be innocent, that if they're innocent, they can be instrumentalities to whitewash the wrongdoing, even if some of their actions were lawful.
Isn't the prudent thing, given this debate we're having, to go even further back to fundamentals, which is the district court relied on a district court case in New York that was vacated. And since we're applying abuse of discretion review, that implies that the district court should exercise its discretion in the first instance. It was clearly heavily, if not completely, influenced by the New York decision that's now vacated. Why isn't the prudent thing to do to vacate, send it back, analyze, you can debate this issue again?
That's certainly one option. I would urge the court to simply affirm. The judge did everything he needed to. He looked at the record. The emails about cleansing, the ghostwriting the judgment, the record here, the facts that are summarized in Judge Kaplan's opinion. And again, there are multiples opinions from Judge Kaplan. The one that's been affirmed finds there was evidence of fraud in the Cabrera report and more than a little evidence that the crime fraud exception applies. But I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. Let me just give a little bit of context. If this court remands, even if it just remands, the litigants who are engaged in this fraud will go around saying that the court vacated a fraud finding. They will, as they did with the Third Circuit holding.
You mean if we do this, they'll say we vacated the fraud finding?
I'm confident they will, Your Honor.
But isn't that what we would have done?
Well, they will take it beyond what this court would likely mean.
Why do we care about that?
Yes.
I don't understand your point. I mean, you know, people can interpret court decisions.
All
right, we could probably handle it. But this is a case, Your Honors, where I think this court should not tolerate what's going on. Going back to Judge Tatel's point, relying on the Ecuadorian judgments, I know the court's not going to decide the issue today.
I don't think I said we should rely on the Ecuadorian judgment.
You didn't. You asked me about what they said.
I just asked you what the victim of the alleged fraud thought.
Let me go back to that. The victim was not the judge, Judge Zambrano.
Can we go back to Judge Kavanaugh's question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
because,
let me do that.
Because it seems to me it's an antecedent question here. And, you know, I've read Judge Kaplan's decision here, and he clearly thought the Cabrera report was a fraud. He didn't think much of these supplementary reports, but I don't see where he said they were a fraud. He said they clearly relied too heavily on Cabrera. He didn't think they were prepared. He thought they were prepared too quickly, but he didn't find they were fraudulent.
I think he did find they were part of the fraud, Your Honor.
He said the Cabrera thing was a fraud,
These
relied too heavily on it, but I don't think I couldn't find anywhere in there where
I believe he did,
said
Your Honor.
It was a fraud, and that wasn't even the issue before him, right?
I think
isn't that right? The question before Judge Kaplan was the validity of the Ecuadorian judgment.
Well, he found that fraud likely tainted the judgment, making it unenforceable.
The Cabrera report was fraudulent.
And he
found that.
As Judge Francis found, and
Judge Francis relied on Judge Kaplan.
And as he pointed out.
Anything there.
I didn't mean to
tell me your best, why don't you point to the best part of the part of the Kaplan judgment that you think best supports.
I believe it's page 1047 of the appendix, Your Honor, where he talks about the Cabrera report and how it's in the Weinberg report and how there's no way to separate out the fraud. Yeah. And he clearly thought this was an effort to paper over.
Page number again. What is
I believe it's 1047 of
okay, so if I look at that and don't find it sufficient, that's it, right? If I don't agree with you, that's where I should look.
Let me just pull it out here.
Yeah.
He says they undertook a scheme to cleanse the report. Yeah. He then later, and he goes on to say that it's impossible to unwind it from the Cabrera report, the Weinberg cleansing reports. And I think he makes very clear that he thought this was a perpetuation of a fraud. I would urge the court to look at page 1047 and 1048, and also earlier in the opinion where he talks about the cleansing scheme when he's talking about the fraud in the court. I don't think there's any doubt, Your Honor, that he thought that this was part of the fraud.
We're reading different reports.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
I said we must be reading different reports, different decisions. I just don't see it in here. He clearly didn't like them. He thought they were done too quickly. He thought they relied too heavily on Cabrera, but I don't see where he found them fraudulent, and he didn't even need to because that wasn't the issue before him, was it?
Well, Your Honor, he found that it was an effort to perpetuate the fraud that was going on. If I came into this court and submitted a ghostwritten document that I had bribed
The question is what Judge Kaplan found.
Yeah, this is what Judge Kaplan found, that this was a perpetuation of a fraud where the litigants bribed a judicial officer, ghostwrote his report when they were caught. Instead of admitting they were wrong, they hired new people to cleanse it and to resubmit the material in a different format. Okay. If that's not a fraud, and I think Judge Kaplan makes clear he thought it was, I don't know what is. And so we urge the court to affirm. We understand there's some procedural issues here, but we've already have the documents, and our RICO action is continuing. So this is a very, very live controversy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Johnson. Appellant has 4 minutes for rebuttal. Up to 4 minutes.
I understand the implication of that, Your Honor. Several points in rebuttal. My learned colleague opened by saying that the lower court made an independent finding. We agree, Chief Judge Santel, with your conclusion that one sentence here wasn't an independent finding, but it was intertwined, if I heard Your Honor's words. And the very proof that it was intertwined with the now reversed decision by Judge Kaplan is my colleague stood up and said, look at the facts he cited. The facts he cited came cited out of the Kaplan opinion. There was no independent record before Judge Fasciola. In fact, I'd suggest to Your Honor that the Third Circuit is the one that got it right here when the same question was presented. It remanded to the district court and said, we instruct the district court to consider whether or not Chevron is bound by the decision as a matter of collateral estoppel in the Ecuadorian court. And so I move on to the next point. Counsel says, okay, one opinion by Judge Kaplan was reversed, but there were other opinions. The critical point is, the lower court didn't say anything about those lower opinions. You can't now import opinions that the lower court never relied upon and say they form the basis when the opinion he did rely upon was vacated and reversed. We also agree with Judge Tattel's statement with respect to the observation that the opening of my opponent's brief was error as a matter of law.
Just asking him a question.
I suggest it is error as a matter of law, and they were forced to take that position because there was no other way than to simply aver that Judge Fasciola was right, and I think...
What do you think about his argument that this is different because this is work product?
I don't think anything of that. There's nothing in the case...
I thought you might say that. Do you know of any case that...
I know of no case that makes that distinction in the context of the mandatory finding that the second prong has to be proven.
There is a case cited by counsel that does make the distinction between attorney-client and work product, and it does say what he says it said. Now, that case did not expressly address the question of the second prong, but it did say that the inquiry was slightly different in a way that was immaterial in that case, in that they looked to the general purpose of the retention rather than the purpose of the document, which could be construed as supporting counsel's proposition, couldn't it?
Your Honor, we think for this purpose that the key is the application of the second prong. But in any event, we don't even know what these 1,400 documents are. Okay, the court never looked at them. Is there an attorney-client issue embedded in the documents? Counsel blithely says, okay, they're all work product documents. I mean, some of them aren't even don't even belong in this case. But in any event, we believe that the argument that we have made with respect to the mandatory application of the second prong controls.
What about counsel's response to my question about the 68% that he said the fraud goes beyond the filing of the reports?
Your Honor, every new court that decides against Chevron is now subsumed within the fraud. So this is a never-ending fraud. You've got to look at the fraud that these experts in the Weinberg group
were involved
in.
Well, maybe he's right about
that. Their activities, the Weinberg group's activities, ended on September the 16th, 2010, when their job was done. There is no suggestion that they were continuing to be involved in this at all. So the time deadline is absolute as to the Weinberg group. If I can wrap up, Your Honor. We agree, of course, that Judge Kaplan, in his view, had no reason to find whether or not the supplementary reports that he didn't like were fraudulent or not. Perhaps the only thing he didn't like more than the supplementary reports was Mr. Danziger. In any event, Your Honor, if I may suggest, we disagree with the notion, respectfully, Judge Kavanaugh, that the appropriate thing to do here is to send it back. We believe it should be sent back with instructions to dismiss. What is it going to do if it goes back? There is no predicate any longer to continue to do anything. This subpoena was issued.
Can't you make that argument to the court in the first instance?
We can, Your Honor. I don't disagree with that.
This whole record was not put together with an idea that we would be entering a dismissal. This is here on a discovery question. That it's a legitimate exception to the interlocutory appeal rule, and should we really be seeking to reach beyond that question that gets the case here to do something that may or may not be supported by the record? There's enough teasing of the record here without having to go look for some more, isn't there?
Your Honor, I had the same problem in the Second Circuit. I won, but I asked them to do more. I'll take the win, and if Your Honor sends it back, I'll ask the district court to do it.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Call the next.